Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, college students, are you looking for a way to get ahead this summer? Northwestern University is offering hundreds of undergrad courses online this summer. Choose an intensive sequence in learning. Registration is open now. Visit northwestern.edu/summer for details.
We call this time to put your big boy pants on. Yes, indeed. Terry Cosgrove is returning to the show for Personal Pack. TC, welcome back.
Thank you, Ben. I miss both of you.
Yeah, it's been too long.
And In person.
I just want to say we made this decision. Well, it's a tentative decision because I guess it depends on what the Sun-Times is doing. But Dennis and I are hoping to return to the studio itself in 2 weeks.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we're going to take next week off. Much deserved break for us. Thank you for saying that. And then we hope to come back to the studio. Will we have guests in the studio, Terry? That depends on the guests, obviously. Like, how are you feeling about these things these days? Are you still at home doing your work?
Yeah, I'm at home. I'm working. You know, I'm working away. I am stunned at how quickly the days go by. I always had this fantasy if I didn't go into the office, I'd have, like, twice as much time to get things done, and it feels like the opposite. Like, it's just the days fly by and I'm not getting as much done as I thought I would, which is a little frustrating. So
yeah,
but it is what it is.
Yeah.
And I can't complain. You know, it's a first world problem compared to all the people who are really suffering out there, and you know, just from front to end, you know, and everywhere you look.
Well, we are going to take the deep dive with you on all sorts of issues having to do with choice. Personal Pack, of course, is the leader in the state of Illinois, or one of the leaders in the state of Illinois, and the movement to for choice for women. But before we do that, just general thoughts. J.B. Pritzker's performance as governor, the reason why I teasingly call this the put your big boy pants on is because that's what Terry told me to do back in 2018. Terry was an early supporter of J.B. Pritzker. I did not vote for J.B. Pritzker in the primary. Terry has not stopped teasing me about that ever since. And he said, put your big boy pants on, Ben, and support J.B. Pritzker. What's your thoughts on J.B. Pritzker's performance during this pandemic, Terry?
Well, he's doing a great job. Listen, I think he's exceeded all, as far as I'm concerned, and this is just from what so many people have told me, like you, who were not early supporters of him, just have said over and over that he's exceeded everyone's expectations. And they don't exactly say, see, you were right, but because I knew that he would be a better governor than Bruce Rauner. There was no doubt about that, but especially on choice. But no, he's really done a very, very good job. This is a very difficult, trying time, and I know he's hanging in there and doing the very best he can for the health and welfare of Illinois. And then on the reproductive rights side, you know, he's one of the few governors in the country that has declared that reproductive health care is an essential service. And as you probably know from, and your listeners know, many other states like Texas and Georgia and Mississippi have tried to use COVID-19 as an excuse to shut down abortion care, as well as access to family planning and all other things. And JB has stood by our providers and our healthcare workers in Illinois who work in the area of reproductive health care. So he's doing a great job. I think we're very, very lucky to have him, and he'll keep it up, I'm sure.
Yeah, and we'll get to the reproductive rights issue. By the way, just say this, I've been talking about this all day. We have this movement that's erupting, not just throughout the country, but also in Illinois. Darren Bailey is the leader of it here in Illinois, the state representative from downstate. And it's a very peculiar situation, Terry. And the Darren Baileys of the world figured out that by and large, the COVID epidemic is hitting hardest at blue sections of the country. That is Democratic areas, Cook County, Chicago, New York City, LA, et cetera, and so forth. And then they jumped to the conclusion that somehow or other, if you voted for Donald Trump, you're going to be protected from COVID-19. That is sort of like the conclusion that this movement has reached. And now it's we have protests, et cetera, and so forth. And I give J.B. Pritzker a lot of credit because he's got to be the governor for the entire state of Illinois. Areas that didn't vote for him, areas that love Donald Trump, and also those are areas where, by and large, the pandemic, the disease isn't as widespread. So it's a very challenging role that he has in trying to balance all these needs. And not everybody's happy with him, to put it mildly.
Right, right. But, you know, to get to the point of they haven't experienced the disease yet, because a lot of the things I have been reading is that New York is in decline. So is L.A., California. And it's now the rural areas that have the least access to health care. You know, the rural counties in the country that are experiencing the greatest explosions of cases. So I don't think the jury's out on that yet. And I think that, you know, Darren Bailey and all of those people, I don't know if your sophisticated analysis actually matches their intellect or their wit. I just think they, you know, they're just out to... they're just out to do anything that is opposed to anything that happens in Cook County or Chicago or happens with a Democrat. And that's what it's about. I don't know if they have that much of a sophisticated analysis of it. Mm-hmm. So I could be wrong.
All right. And I pledge that if the trend that you were talking about continues, and actually Dennis and I were talking about this off mic, the number of cases nationally have fallen, but there is an increase in some states like Alabama and Arkansas, et cetera. I pledge that I will show more compassion for people who live in areas different from where I live, politically different, than they have shown toward where I live. Just making that pledge, TC. I'm going
to
make
right.
that.
Right, and I agree.
You know.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move on to the news of the day. You mentioned that Texas, Georgia, and Mississippi are using COVID-19 as an excuse to take away reproductive rights. I just shake my head in bewilderment. These are the very states, of course, where the movement is strongest to open up the state. These are the very states that are decrying the snatching away of liberty and saying that we should not use this pandemic as an excuse to shut down the economy. And yet they're using it as an excuse to take away reproductive rights. It's an interesting little phenomenon going there.
Right. And there's also more hypocrisy involved with it. They're shutting down places that do medical abortions, which is different than surgical. Surgical abortion is actually surgery, whereas the medical abortion is the abortion pill. And they're claiming that the ruse that they're operating under is that precious PPE equipment shouldn't be used for abortion care, but it should be used, you know, for frontline workers in a hospital, except there's one slight problem with that. You don't need PPE to give someone a pill. In fact, England and a bunch of other countries are now allowing women to have an interview, a telemedicine interview, and then taking the pill at home. Because, of course, we know that the abortion pill is safer than an Advil or a Tylenol. So their excuse for shutting them down just doesn't hold any water. And it's, again, just rank hypocrisy. And it's just causing just unbelievable stress and horror stories for women. In fact, we're starting to see women in Illinois from Texas and Louisiana. Can you believe someone has to drive to Illinois to take a pill that is safer than an Advil? Mm. Or Colorado from Texas, which is another story I just read about. So that's where we're at. Yep.
And, you know, I don't think I've said this on the air. I probably have, but I can't remember. I say so many things, Terry. But just talking to you make me think about this. Follow me on this one. Right now, many of the people who are angriest at the Pritzkers of the world, the Cuomos of the world, for going too far as they look at, as they see it, in closing down the economy, are saying the only people who die are old people.
Right.
And it's as though old people don't matter. But every life is sacred when it comes to abortion. Have you ever noticed that? Like, they pick and choose which lives are sacred?
Oh. Right. No, no. Well, you know what I always attested to? It's the lives that they don't have to worry about being to care about. You know, a fertilized egg, they don't really have to care about. But the minute the a pregnancy comes to full term, all of a sudden they have to, someone has to be concerned for that person as well as an elderly person. And, you know, again, it goes to their hypocrisy that they're, you know, that here they are talking about being pro-life and then putting that in quotes, of course. And then, you know, they don't care about all these elderly people that are dying and are in nursing homes where the, you know, where it's spreading and where it could be solved so easily with testing and contact tracing, because people are in a confined space. They're not, you know, as far as I know, these seniors aren't running out to bars all night and amusement parks or whatever, or swimming pools. And they refuse to take the measures to protect them because they just don't care. I think that's the bottom line, Ben. They're callous. They don't really care. And this whole thing about caring about that abortion is anything other than, you know, a woman's right to decide. It's all facade because it's about controlling women's bodies and women's health and women's lives. And that's all it's ever been about. And everything else is a facade. They don't, you know, they don't care about young children, either actions in the General Assembly and the United States Congress. And they don't care about older people or anyone in particular, except themselves when they need it. You know, when they attack, I love when they attack government-run health care and they're carrying Medicare cards around, you know. So.
Inconsistencies indeed. All right, before we get to Illinois.
Right.
And because one of the things I hear a lot from my friends of the liberal persuasion is, Ben, we don't have to worry about it in Illinois because we passed this bill, HB40, and I'll get into that, whether, you know, what the status is on reproductive rights in Illinois. Let's talk about nationally. There's a couple of cases that we should know about that are making their way to the Supreme Court that could really undercut reproductive rights. Talk about them, Terry.
Well, the case that the court's going to decide prior to June 30th is June Medical Services versus G, which is a case out of Louisiana. And in fact, the reason why I think the we're so pessimistic about it, it's the exact same case that almost word for word that was heard out of Texas 2 years ago. And then Anton Scalia passed away, and it was a 4-4 decision. So the law was not enforced, and now it's back again in front of this newly constituted Supreme Court. And generally, the court doesn't take up cases, issues that they've already decided. But the fact that they're taking this up does not. But this case is so much more onerous than even the Texas case because it has several other stipulations in it. Like, for example, it allows a doctor to sue on behalf of his patients. And what this case does, if the court decides to go along with this argument, takes away that right, which means that the only case that can be brought before the court would be by an individual woman who is harmed and not as a class action on behalf of all women. I mean, it has so many horrible implications in it, as well as the basically what the court will do. And it really doesn't matter how the anti-choice U.S. Supreme Court justices or the media parses all of this. What this case is going to do is going to open the door to the 50 state legislatures to enact any kind of anti-abortion restriction they want. That's really what it comes down to. So we can talk about all the details of the case that we want, but that's going to be the end result in the next few weeks. And then we're going to see thousands of anti-abortion restrictions that will basically leave most of the United States as a complete desert for reproductive health care, abortion care, and there will only be a few states in the country on both coasts, and then possibly Illinois in the middle of the country where abortion will be legal and accessible. And already Hope Clinic in Granite City, Illinois, 50% of their patients are from out of state, from Missouri, who only has one provider, from Kentucky, from Tennessee, and Indiana, and and other places. And close to a quarter of the 25% of the women coming to Illinois that are seeing providers in Illinois are from Indiana and other states around us, Iowa, Wisconsin. So, and the other thing that I think is important for people to understand, for low-income women, for rural women and young women, they've already been living in a post-Roe era for the most part, because in so many states, the restrictions that the court has already found to be legal and to be enforceable are already denying millions of women access to reproductive health care. I mean, only 80% of the counties in the United States do not have a single abortion provider. 80% of the counties in the United States. So if we pass the, I keep saying we're in the post-Roe era already for the most part, and this case is going to solidify it and just blow open the door for additional restrictions.
And so it was, it's coming before the Supreme Court, and the big difference now from the case, the Texas case, as you were pointing out, is that Brett Kavanaugh is on the court. So
yeah,
it would seem like there's, and Brett Kavanaugh, of course, and Neil and Gorsuch are two Trump appointees, and they pretty much do whatever Trump tells them. So follow me on this, Terry. Unless someone flips, it should pass 5-4. Those restrictions should be approved by the Supreme Court. Am I missing something here? Do you think there's
No, not at all. You have it, because the original case was 4-4, and Kennedy was one of the people that was the justice that that was on our side. And so and now that Kennedy's gone, it's a done deal. Yeah. Now Roberts might try to parse it a little, which is what I said, no matter how the Supreme Court tries to parse the decision or the press reads what they do, the reality is going to be the fact that they even took this case to begin with when it was already decided 2 years ago. This is unprecedented that a court would take on almost identical case that had already decided and bring it up again, means that Roberts and the right-wing justices on the court already know what they're going to do with it.
What do you mean by parse it? What do you mean by that? Explain.
Well,
that.
They're going to say, well, here's what they're going to say. I can tell you right now, you don't even have to read a newspaper or go on the Ben Jarofsky show to hear this, because I'm going to tell you right now what they're going
to
say.
Well, you have to go on the Ben Jarofsky show to hear what you're about to say, so go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, again, you're not going to have to go on the Ben Jarofsky show after the decision, because I'm telling you what they're going to say right now. They're going to say, we didn't overturn Roe v. Wade. What we decided is, because the issue is so controversial, we believe it's in the best interest of the 50 states to decide what their policies are when it comes to abortion. Guess what? That's exactly what the law was prior to Roe v. Wade. On January 21st, 1973, the day before Roe was decided, that was exactly the law of the land. So just look for that language in there, because that's going to signal to the state legislatures, you can go ahead, you can pass any restriction you want. You can say that life begins at 1 minute at conception. You can say that an abortion provider that gives a woman a pill that's safer than a Tylenol or an Advil, you need to have a full-blown surgical operating room, like you would do open-heart surgery or brain surgery, for the safest medical procedure on the planet. They're going to say that 48-hour waiting period, 72-hour waiting periods, that you have to have hospital privileges at a hospital within 30 miles, even though the Ohio law says that you have to have hospital privileges within 30 miles, but says any that no hospital in Ohio can offer an abortion doctor hospital privileges. So all of that's going to be legal. So, which means that there won't be any place that a doctor or an abortion provider will be able to operate. There's no space because all of these laws will be into effect and there'll be criminal penalties mm-hmm. attached to all of it.
So by parsing it this way, it would yeah. seem to me and that what John Roberts is trying to do is to take an issue or to neutralize the issue for the election. And I always work from the assumption that the John Roberts is a very political justice and that he's uh-huh. looking out as much as he can for the best interest of the Republican Party. And so he won't be as nutty or right wing as, say, Kavanaugh, who was just an extreme Republican. He was a political operative for Ken Starr, so nothing's changed with him.
Right.
But so what Roberts is doing is looking at swing voters. So he's got to take care of the anti-abortion faction in the Republican Party. And at the same time, he has to do it in what? Sort of a politically palpable way so that a voter in DuPage County doesn't turn against Donald Trump. Is that what the game is?
Yeah, well, they want to mislead, you know, they're going to want, like I said, they're going to try to mislead, and I hope the press doesn't go along with it, they're going to mislead the public that they really didn't fundamentally change the Roe v. Wade said, even though it's been watered down and it's already almost gone, and say, oh, we really didn't do anything. We just think it's that states should have the ability to regulate abortion. That's the best place for this to happen. That's mm-hmm. going to be the overriding decision that's going to come out of this. But they're saying, oh, but we didn't do anything to disrupt Roe. We left it. We still believe the Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, except the states get to outlaw it. That's really what it's going to come down to.
Yeah.
So I think you're absolutely right. They want to mislead people as much as possible about what they're really doing. And if they say that in the majority opinion that Roe is left in place, but then they'll have their hat to hang on that's what they did. If they left Roe in place, when in fact it's going to be a total joke.
And so how do you think this is going to play in this 2020 election? Because follow me, in 2016, it was not the pivotal issue that propelled Hillary Clinton over the top in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, which would have given her the electoral vote she needed to become the next president. And I just want to remind everybody that she won the popular vote. How do you think this nuanced slicing of the issue will play politically in this upcoming election?
Well, I think the reason why they're going to want it to be nuanced is because they're afraid of how it will play with the very suburban women that you mentioned that will be, you know, be part of the key coalition that Biden will need to win. But it will, yeah, I think it will alarm people and to the extent that they get the information, let's put it that way. And so it'll be really interesting to see how the press plays this. That's what I said, no matter how the press parses this or the justices on the court, the anti-choice justices parse it, is really going to determine what the reaction is going to be.
And what can your organization do about this, Terry? I know you're mostly, your greatest concern, of course, is Illinois politics. Can you play a role in it, or can groups like yours play a role in this and sort of spreading the word?
Oh yeah, that's why I'm saying what I'm saying right now is warning people. No matter what the press says, no matter what the anti-choice justices say, this is what it is. And you know what we can do here in Illinois is stop the happy talk that Illinois is this absolutely secure pro-choice state. We're not California, we're not New York, we're not Connecticut, we're not Oregon or Washington. HB 40 that you referenced at the beginning here only passed the Illinois House by 2 votes. It passed the Senate by 3 votes. The Reproductive Health Act only passed both chambers by the slimmest of margins. We could have one election cycle, let me repeat this, one election cycle, like 2016, the right-wing Republicans get control of the Illinois General Assembly. There are 27 anti-abortion bills that are pending in the Illinois General Assembly today as we sit here. And all of those bills could be revived, which just a change of a very few votes. This is not California. This is not New York. Our position as a state where reproductive rights is available is very, very tenuous. And I hope people realize that all this talk about, you know, Illinois being this solidly blue state and everything, if that's not the case in the Illinois General Assembly, we are on the margins. And also with LGBTQ rights, I mean, the bill that passed that said that schools need to teach LGBTQ history alongside other history curriculums passed with, on the nose, 60 votes. It takes 60 votes to pass a bill in the House. So we are right on the margins here. And the other thing I want to point out, when Roe is overturned, when they knock the basis out of it, marriage equality and so many other privacy issues that have been decided by the court since Roe v. Wade are all subject to review then by the U.S. Supreme Court. So we could very well see a case going to the U.S. Supreme Court from a state basically attacking the legal justification for marriage equality at the federal level, using the fact that Roe is no longer the law of the land as it was originally decided, and use the same argument that marriage equality should go back to all 50 states and shouldn't be a federal issue anymore, because that's what they're going to say about abortion. So that's just one example of the other fallout from the Roe decision being vacated.
You know, Terry, I know we're going to get into this conversation as we get closer to November's election. But
right.
just listening to you talk about how thin the margin is that we had in Illinois to pass HB 40, are there some pivotal races? And again, we'll be talking more about this as we get closer to November, but are there some pivotal races you want to alert people to in the state of Illinois, legislative races, Senate races? Go ahead.
Yeah, generally, I mean, first of all, in 2018, we flipped six anti-choice House seats to pro-choice. We passed the Reproductive Health Act with four votes to spare. So had we not flipped those six seats, we never would have passed the RHA. So that's how critical that 2018 election was. And several of them were won by a few hundred votes. So this was not an overwhelming victory. It was run, we won it at the margins. And so all six of those seats are, well, actually Mark Walker, one of them does not have an opponent. So he doesn't have a Republican opponent from Arlington Heights. So five of these seats are now up in the Republican. You know, we have more anti-choice right-wing Republicans running for the Illinois General Assembly than at any time before. So let's start right there. So we have these five seats that we have to defend, and that's just in the House. There are a few seats in the Senate. And on top of that, so that's really the number one concern. And then after that, we are going to be on the offensive in about anywhere from 8 to 10 House races where we're actually taking on right-wing Republicans. So as a buffer in the event that, you know, we lose any of the seats that we currently have. So without getting into specifics, because I can do that later on another show, but that's the big picture. And then, of course,
go ahead.
In 2022, we're going to have a governor's race, and we're going to be electing a general assembly under an entirely newly drawn legislative and congressional map.
Well, let me just take the opportunity, since you mentioned it, my favorite little rant and rail. You know, every time you come on the show, I go here every time. All my friends of the do-good government persuasion who are pushing for a fair map, you have no idea how much damage you're doing to the reproductive rights of women throughout this country, because you're suckers being used by the Republicans to undercut whatever gains the Democrats have gotten throughout the rest of the country. And if we're all going to get together to establish one set of rules for all states, I will happily sign on to a fair map. But if it's just fair map in areas where the Democrats win, sorry. I can't go for that.
Hallelujah, Ben Jarofsky. I couldn't agree with you more. You put on your big boy paint. And that's it.
Yeah.
And what I said, you know, this fair map stuff is all fine and well. Go to Ohio and get it. Go to Ohio and get it done. Start there.
Or Wisconsin.
I'll send money.
Yeah.
I'll send money. Yeah. Wisconsin, Ohio, Missouri, Iowa. You know, I'll write a check. I'll make a contribution. Go there. Go get it done. If you want to do this, get it done in all the Republican states first, or do it that includes all 50 states. So that's the only way I'm in favor of it.
No, I'm with you.
But luckily, in Illinois, we're going to have a fair map that's going to respect the rights of minority voters. It's going to respect the rights of a lot of people, including women. And we'll hopefully come out of this with a stronger General Assembly than we've had in a very long time, and maybe the strongest ever. So,
by the way,
we're on the right path.
By the way, I just want to promote an upcoming show. I'm going to have a state representative from Wisconsin, a Democrat named Greta Neubauer. She's from the Racine area, and she'll be talking about life in Wisconsin with a Republican-led state house. So if you want to sense, Illinois voters, of what life exists like in a state where Republicans rule the land, you should definitely check into my interview with Greta Neubauer. So then maybe you'll think twice about a fair map in just Democratic states as opposed to all states.
You know, and I know I hate to be nice on this subject, but I do want to say there are some very well-intentioned people that are involved with it. And so I just want to be clear that that in some cases that is the case, but it's just the wrong approach. That's all.
All right, TC, bending over backwards to be nice. That's
I know.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. I just can we rewind the tape and cut that out?
we'll edit that out. I'm going to keep that in to haunt you with it, just to be nice.
Can you beep it? Can't you beep it like they do on TV when people swear?
All right. Like, when has the other side been nice to us? All right. Anyway, let's move on from that. Suddenly, we're nice. Let's go to some national political talk while I've got you here. And I was telling you before you came on the show, Heather Booth was a guest a couple of weeks ago, an old friend of mine, activist, longtime activist in leftist circles, Democratic circles. And she was urging, she gave a really passionate plea as a veteran, how about that, like an old-time lefty calling on younger Bernie supporters and younger lefties to vote Democratic, vote for Joe Biden, even if they don't love Joe Biden. That was her passionate plea. I've struggled with Joe Biden, as you know, Terry. I did not vote for him in the primary. I will vote for him. I'm no doubt about that. I've definitely, if they gave me a ballot right now, I'd fill it out and just send it in for Joe Biden. But you must be finding yourself all the time making similar appeals to the younger people, just like Heather Booth is. Is that, you know, speaking as a person?
Actually,
go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I was just on a webinar with Heather a few hours ago. So, and she is one of my, actually, she was, she helped mentor me in the 70s and 80s when I met her on Harold Washington's first campaign in 1983. So, Heather and I go back a long time. She's an amazing organizer. Amazing national figure, and she's Chicago born and bred, so we're very lucky to have her. She's out in Washington D.C. right now. But you know what I have to say, Ben? I think most people I know see what's at stake in this election, and I don't think that I haven't had to convince too many people that I've run into to support Joe Biden. But what I will say is that I, first of all, I remember. I remember, now I'm forgetting his name. Barney Frank said the only time he ever voted for a perfect candidate was the first time he ran for office. So I think we have to remember that there is no such thing as a perfect candidate out there. And also, I think it's important for people to understand, and you and I have had this conversation before, that we really have to give people credit for evolving and changing. And whatever, you know, problems people have had with Joe Biden in the past, he is coming around on so many issues. For example, an issue that's dear to my heart, you know this, Ben, because of 40 years I worked on HB 40, which provided that Medicaid pay for low-income women's abortions. Joe Biden changed his mind on that a few months ago. Tell me what good it would do to beat Joe Biden up for the next 5 months over his error in the past. It would do absolutely no good. You know what it'd do? It'd help get Donald Trump reelected if I did that. But I'm not doing that because it's great that he came around. And so I think it's important for people to, as a progressive movement, if we want to make change and we want to bring around real change, it's important that we allow people to join us when we believe they haven't been right in the past. And I use marriage equality as the example. 15, 20 years ago, you could not find anyone other than a few rare people in the gay rights movement who thought that marriage equality would ever be possible. There wasn't anyone in favor of it. There wasn't a single elected official. Barack Obama wasn't in favor of it until very late in the game. Actually, Joe Biden was one of the first people that came out in favor of it. So if you remember, he's the one that put Obama on the spot. He did that interview.
Wait. Don't get me started on this. You're pushing the wrong button. Barack Obama was for it. Then he was against it.
Then he was for it.
Okay. So,
right. I know.
You're proving the reality proves your point that Barack Obama, I never, ever, ever believed that Barack Obama was against gay marriage. I believe that he made a political calculation when he ran for Senate in 2004 that it was not in his best interest to be for it. And this is you and I
but
have
here's,
this.
Let me finish ahead. What I'm going to say.
Go ahead.
Let me finish and then. And so, but now you can't. I don't know anyone that is in my circle or anyone that wasn't always for gay marriage, according to them.
Yeah.
And we just never bothered to bring up a bill to do it, or we never bothered to file a lawsuit. No. So are we going to run around and you know, hold everyone to this standard? Well, you didn't support gay marriage 10 years ago or 5 years ago. No, we're not. Let's move forward. Let's allow people to have a change of heart, have a change of mind, understand that a policy is important, whether it's Medicaid funding for low-income women's abortions, whether it's marriage, whether it's workers' rights, whatever. So that's what I think we have to look at. The lens of Joe Biden, and not that everything that he ever did was wrong and now he's good all of a sudden. I mean, he's a person of his age. He is up against the biggest existential threat to our future, our safety, our world. Let's get our act together, elect Joe Biden. He will have people in his universe that will put our government back to working for people and actually make some substantive changes that I think we all want to our healthcare system, to attacking the devastation to our climate, to workers' rights, to obviously to reproductive rights. So let's give the guy a chance. Let's get this done. We cannot reelect Donald Trump. That is the bottom line.
All right, you and I see eye to eye in that.
And as I say in your show all the time, Ben, I would vote for a lobotomized flea over Donald Trump.
Okay, well, I am not running for office. All right, anyway, bad joke. Okay, so let's close by doing a couple of movie reviews. And you told me something that I didn't realize. I thought I knew everything about your life. I know what high school you went to. I know what college you went to. I know where you got your start. I know when you first started bugging me about writing stories that you wanted me to write. So I know all these things about you, but I did not know until we had a conversation before the show that you had a debate with Phyllis Schlafly. And so why don't you tell our listeners about the debate, Phyllis Schlafly and who Phyllis Schlafly is. And I thought it was a delightful little story. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. No, I'm glad to. Well, as some of your listeners may know, there's a series on FX and Hulu called Mrs. America. And it's basically about the struggle for the Equal Rights Amendment starting back in the early 70s. And the subject of the show is really one of the main characters is Phyllis Schlafly, although each segment they highlight another person such as Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug, and others. But it's very, very Illinois-centric. Well, in the late 70s, I was chair of Illinois Men for the ERA, and we did everything we could to pass it. Of course, we failed until it passed a few years ago. But as part of that, I was up against Phyllis Schlafly, and I was on a radio show with her at one point. And it was short. Her son, her gay son, John, used to come to a bar in Champaign called The Bar. And it was pretty well known that she had a gay son, but she never wanted to admit to it. And then news got out. And so on the radio show, not unlike the Ben Tversky show, I asked her. Her thesis was that children became gay because their parents weren't home enough and didn't pay enough attention. They were basically, because it was their parents were bad. And so I asked her on the radio show if her son was gay because she was a bad mother. And she said that she was from Alton, Illinois. Is Dennis listening?
Yes.
And basically she said that was her private business and no one else's business about her son and her family. So that was it. That
wow.
was the,
you actually, I did not know
I ran
that.
Into her in Springfield.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw her up close in Springfield. Also the show focuses on the National Women's Conference that took place in Houston. And there were 50 conferences and 50 state legislatures, and ours took place in Bloomington, Illinois, where she and Bella Abzug were supposed to have, she was going to show up to a speech that Bella was going to give, and she never did. And Bella gave this rousing speech in favor of women's rights, reproductive rights, the Equal Rights Amendment. And I was there at that Bloomington conference. So I have a piece of history.
So when you confronted her, I did not know you confronted her about her son. You were in a radio studio with her? Were you?
Yeah, it was a call-in. No, it was a call-in show.
Oh, so in other words, I got you. So you weren't facing. So in other words, she didn't. There was no personal exchange afterwards. I would have wondered what she would have said.
No, there wasn't. No, unfortunately, I would have loved that. But
well, you know what? I got to say. Ordinarily, my attitude is family's off limits. But when a politician makes a flat-out declaration, the way she did. That somehow or other parental upbringing has to do with one's sexual choice. She's wide open for it, in my opinion.
Oh, totally. She was running around saying, I mean, to be clear, as a little history lesson, you'll remember this, Ben, but, you know, which I think is hysterical now, she was walking around. I mean, her argument against the ERA basically had three pillars. Number one, women would have to serve in the military, check. Not have to, but women would be allowed to serve in the military, check. That men and women there would be sharing the same bathrooms, check. And that the ERA would cause gay marriage, check.
Yeah.
And so the argument.
Yeah,
so
I like
the
check.
Three things.
Yeah.
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 Those are the three things that she argued against. But in talking about gay people and talking about parents, she was attacking my parents, saying that I turned out to be a gay man because my parents were not good parents. And I was really offended by that. And every other person I knew who she was denigrating, she wasn't just, you know, putting down LGBTQ people and advocating that we didn't have our equal rights, but she was attacking our family. And to me, that was totally unacceptable. Normally, I would agree with you. And I've always, for my test has always been the hypocrisy factor. Like there were a million rumors that flew around about Harold Washington being gay, but Harold Washington never voted against, he never spoke out against gay rights. Harold Washington could have all the privacy that he wanted, and so could other people. But people like Aaron Schock, who run around and vote against gay rights and speak out against gay rights and then live this, you know, closeted lifestyle until a few months ago when he finally, you know, came out and said what everyone already knew. So to me, that's the difference. The standard is if you want to, you know, quietly go about your life. I mean, I wish people would be honest and open. It wasn't even an issue. And I think it's less so now to a large degree than it was many years ago. But the hypocrisy is what irritates the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah. No, it's funny you should mention this, and we're totally on a tangent here, but I just wrote a story for the reader about an old friend of mine who passed on not too long ago, Albert Dickens. And I knew him in the 70s. I mean, I got to meet him again not too long. We worked at the Sun-Times. And I did not know he was gay. And it was just such a different world in the 70s, Terry. You know, it was just such a different freaking world. It's hard to even imagine it. You know what I mean? And I thought about it. It's like all the homophobic wisecracks that Albert was subjected to. You know, he worked in the sports department right. of the Daily News back in the 70s. I'm sure he heard stuff all the time. And he just, I mean, it's just a different world. That's
right. And that's, and you know, it's how people survive. You know, I always say, I'm so hesitant to ever compare, you know, anyone's oppression up against anyone else's. I mean, why do some young gay teenagers thrive and become out there and really take control of their lives, and then another huge swath commit suicide? How is it that one African American man can become president, and then there's the whole, you know, in the midst of the horrible racism in this country? And it's just so it's a complicated subject. I know I mean, just on a personal level, I always survived by just being as sassy as I possibly could and just didn't let anyone push me around. And I got my nose broken, and I filed the first lawsuit ever successfully in the United States challenging discrimination based on sexual orientation and public accommodations. You know, my partner and I were dragged out of a straight bar in Champagne for dancing together. Well, we weren't literally dragged out, but we were asked to leave and refused to, and then it's a whole long story. But that was in 1980. So I just always felt it was better to be out. And plus, I had fun. You know, that was the time. I was lucky. I had the support that I had of friends around me, and I never looked back, really. So.
A young Terry Cosgrove in 1980. I could just picture that scene in the bar. But did you win the lawsuit, by the way?
Yeah, we won the lawsuit. It was the first case ever. Yeah, it was in public accommodations. Yeah, it was. It was ground. Heck, there's a Mother Jones article about it. Didn't I ever? I should send it to you.
You should send it. Find it. What that bartender, that bar establishment learned, you got to, when you're dealing with Terry Cosgrove, you got to put your big boy pants on.
Big boy pants on. In fact, it was funny because the mayor of Champaign, her name was Joan Severance, and she was a card-carrying member of the ACLU and a Republican, and I worked on her mayoral campaign, and it was under the Champaign County Ordinance, City of Champaign Ordinance, that we filed the lawsuit under. And part of the way why the suit was successful, and then I'll shut up about it, is I knew, and I was chair of the Urbana Human Relations Commission, so I knew all the cops in Champaign and Urbana just because I'd been there for a while and had been a political activist and, you know, just all of that. So when the two cops showed up, they said, "Terry, we really don't want to arrest you." And I said, "Well, the only way you can do that is let me pull out a piece of paper and just sign this piece of paper that says the only reason my partner Patrick and I are being asked to leave and you're want to arrest us is that we were two men dancing together, and that's the only reason." "Oh yeah, we'll do that." So they signed. So I pulled out a legal pad that I always carry around. They signed a piece of paper. The next morning, Joan Severance walks into her office. I'm sitting on the floor in front of her locked office, and she said, "What are you doing here?" And I pulled out the piece of paper, told her the story, and she goes, "Oh shit, I can't believe they were that stupid." Not the cops, the bar.
Right. Yeah.
And so it was really a slam dunk of a case. It was kind of like the bed and breakfast case in Illinois that refused to do the civil union ceremony like 2 years ago from downstate Illinois. And they sent an email to the two guys saying, we won't allow it because you're two men trying to have a civil union ceremony. And it went, and they went all the way to the Illinois Supreme Court. They kept on appealing it. And it was just, it was decided. You put stuff like that in writing, you don't generally win, you know?
Yeah. By the way, just the vision of a card carrying member of the ACLU being a Republican. That in itself is ancient history, okay? Card carrying members of the ACLU being Republicans.
In fact, I think she was actually president of the ACLU chapter of Champaign County in the late 70s. Yeah, yeah. Well, there were, you know, Ben, go back far enough, you know, there used to be, at one time, there used to be sane Republicans. You know, we won't get started on Jim Thompson and some of the others.
All right. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to close on the interview, but I'm going to make a promise. I'm going to watch the documentary, a.k.a. Jane Roe. I haven't seen it yet. And the next time we're on the show, we're going to do the deep dive on the documentary and the whole case, a.k.a. Jane Roe. I have not seen it, but I intend to watch it, and we'll bring you on. We'll take do a little more history lesson for the youngsters out there. How about that?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, very good. Great. Terry Cosgrove from Personal Pack. Thank you so much, T, for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you very much. Bye.